Welcome to the current federal tax developments for the week of February the 12th, 2018. This is Ed Zollars, and I'll be talking to you about what's happened here and what just happened recently regarding federal tax developments this week. As always, this is brought to you by Kaplan Professional Accounting Education and your state society of CPAs. We had a few things go on this week, and in fact, a big something went on just before I recorded this. I'm recording this on Friday afternoon. And we had a very, very short government shutdown, followed by a brand new tax law. So we're ready for everything. So let's talk and start about talking about the Bipartisan Budget Act of 2018 that was signed into law. It was signed into law on February the 9th, 2018, after what is probably one of the shortest government shutdowns ever that took place overnight. So by early this morning, in fact, for those of us here on the West Coast, I'm not quite on the West Coast, I'm close enough though, it was very early in the morning when we finally knew that the second part got passed, and then we had a signature by the president. But the Bipartisan Budget Act, in addition to solving the government shutdown, managed to do a couple of other things for us. It contained a rather large number of tax provisions, and there was a lot of speculation about what would go in this bill. Now, one thing that did not go in this bill were any technical corrections for the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. That includes a correction for what the Tax Foundation, you know, is calling essentially, you know, the grain problem, grain bust, shall we say, where we have the problem with the cooperatives that are able to, that basically, if a farmer sells grain to the cooperative, they get a 20% deduction. I guess the term they're using at the Tax Foundation is grain glitch. That was not fixed in this bill. There had been speculation it would be, but what we did get in this bill, though, were the extenders. So the catch for us, though, because we got the extenders, as those of you who are involved in doing tax returns know, is those extenders, everything expired back in 16. What that means is if you've actually processed returns at this point, and those returns have something on them or had something on them, that effectively now has been affected by the extenders from last year, it's got a problem with it. Now, a lot of the extenders are industry specific. So if your client's not building a NASCAR track, or your client doesn't raise thoroughbred horses or own thoroughbred horses, you're probably safe there. And I assume most of our clients don't. And those that do, you were very aware you were watching the extender bill like a hawk. But there are some bigger things that ended up coming into the extenders bill. And some of those that are in the extenders bill, the key things that we saw come up that were part of the extenders, includes extension through the end of 2017 of the exclusion for cancellation of debt income arising from a loan that was secured by your principal residence that was used for acquiring it. All those rules take place. That's good through the end of December 31st, 2017. It also extended the deduction for qualified mortgage insurance premiums. So that also is allowed for 17, you meet that requirement. The above-the-line deduction for tuition or related expenses also comes back through the end of 17. And the non-business energy property credit and the residential energy credit are among a large number of energy-related items that were extended through the end of 17. Now, the interesting fun part about this is, of course, that all of these have already at this point expired because they expired at the end of 17. Congress gave them only a one-year reprieve. The theory is that Congress is going to go back and try to figure out which of these they want to make permanent, which ones they want to get rid of for good. We'll see if that actually happens or if next December we are again running up with a new issue with extenders. You know, we can always hope that Congress we'll do something quickly, but Congress moving quickly. I heard a one-liner on a podcast this week. Congress has two speeds, glacial and lightning fast. And unfortunately, they're in glacial mode 99% of the time. And then suddenly they do lightning fast and get something goes through. So unfortunately, I have a feeling with the extenders, we'll be on glacial mode until the end of December when we'll suddenly get the lightning fast mode. Now, a couple of other big things happen in this bill. They added a number of special provisions for California wildfires. And what they really did here was, if you remember, there was a special bill passed last year that was the Disaster Tax Relief and Airport and Airway Extension Act of 2017 that provided a bunch of special treatments available in the hurricane disaster areas that included some relief for victims, unlimited charitable contributions if you gave to relief for those things, a credit for employers who continued to pay wages to employees, some special rules that allowed you to reach into a qualified plan, take loans, even if the loan provisions weren't yet in the plan, also gave you an extended time to pay back the loan, waive the early distribution requirements. What they've done in this bill is simply added the California wildfires as a type of disaster that's going to get effectively the same relief as those hurricanes. So the same issues come there. If you remember back to the hurricane coverage we had earlier in the year, this is effectively adding the same thing to it as we saw for relief from Hurricanes Harvey, Irma, and Maria. We also had there some items added in this bill that had been the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, but had been dropped due to Byrd rule concerns before they went forward. Now, these are a lot of interesting provisions, and most of them are kind of odd unless you produce alcoholic beverages. Then I guess it's kind of a bigger thing, but if you don't produce alcoholic beverages, it's not quite as huge a thing as it could have been. But there are some things. There is a waiver of limitations with respect to claims arising from exclusion from gross income for wrongfully incarcerated individuals. The time for filing those refund claims had expired in 2016. If it turns out that you were more than 3 years out, that was considered to be unfair because this was for wrongfully incarcerated individuals. They got damages. So they've now extended that for 3 years from the date that a 15 return would have been due. So effectively, it's extended through December of this year. They also gave some special relief to individuals that have properly levied funds from retirement plan, where they get those funds back. We're going to be allowed to put those back in the plan. And essentially we're going to be able to do that up through the extended due date of the return year in question, even though we're far beyond the 60-day rollover date. And they're also put in a freeze in the amount the IRS can charge as a user fee for installment agreements for individuals that go into them. This law also put into place something, again, all of these from the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act at some point got pulled due to concern with the Byrd rule. They also added that Form 1040 NSR. That'll be for seniors. That form is to be modeled on the 1040 EZ, but you have to be 65 or older to use it. It can be used even if your income for the year includes Social Security benefits, distributions from qualified retirement plans, annuities, or other deferred comp arrangements, interest and dividends, or capital gains or losses. Now, the form shall be available in essence without regard to the amount of any item of taxable income or the total amount of taxable income for the tax year. It's supposed to be made available for tax years beginning after the date of enactment, the date of enactment being February 9th, 2018. That would mean that if your tax year began on March 1st of 2018, you should be able to use it next year when you file your February 28th, right? It's going to be 2019, 28th tax return, 2019 tax return. That means that it would appear likely the service will need this form out for calendar year 2018 returns. We'll have to see. They could delay. Tough to see. I don't know if you have great interest in doing a 1040 SR. If any of your clients do, but yeah, it's going to be a brand new form out there that you could use in those situations. Congress, now, as we said, this takes care of this. So we have all of these taken care of. The Bipartisan Budget Act is there. You may find it interesting, those who've been following along with the partnership audit problems, the centralized partnership audit regime, may remember the name of the bill that established that was also the Bipartisan Budget Act, but then of 2050. The other key, as we note, yeah, they're changing the rules after tax season began. But we had been expecting that to a large extent through most of the season. A lot of us have been expecting this. We knew that Orrin Hatch was trying to attach the extenders. He tried to put them on as early as back we got the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. We knew he was looking for something to attach it to. We expected it to get attached. It got attached to this. The big caveat there, though, is now we got to wait for the IRS to get forms ready, and also to get ready their electronic filing system to handle these forms. So taxpayers who are going for these benefits may need to wait to file their returns. More Tax Cuts and Jobs Act issues came down. The IRS updated their 2017-2018 priority guidance report, the second quarter update. That was issued here on February 7th. This guidance report, which tells us what the service plans to work on effectively during this basically fiscal year, and this is the second quarter of the IRS fiscal year, they added 18 projects of immediate concern related to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. And they added 29 projects in total, but those that were Tax Cuts and Jobs Act are here. Some of those are not unexpected in here. We're going to have issues like relating to 199 Cap A. That's a big thing there for qualified business income deduction. We're going to be issuing things under the interest deduction rules of 163J for businesses. There are two things on the list that already have had guidance issued. That includes the guidance on the international provisions, the repatriation rules of 965. The IRS put that out in Notice 2018-7, which was issued right at the end of 17. The IRS also issued information suspending the requirement to withhold if you purchase a partnership interest through a broker. That was in basically Notice 2018-8. That was also released right at the end of December. But we have a whole bunch of other rules here they plan to look at. The other catch you need to look at is if your problem that you've seen, and we've all seen issues we have with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act where you're not sure how things go, if your project doesn't appear on here, then that may mean you're going to be flailing around for a bit. It may take longer than you'd hope to get guidance in the area you'd like. The IRS has suggested that one of the things they're going to do is there's going to be more reliance on regulation, less on notices. A couple of reasons why that was a little surprising. First, because this rule, apparently we've been told that the two-for-one rule will apply to these regulations, so the IRS has to get rid of two regs for each one they issue under these new rules. And the other issue was, of course, that the 1986 Tax Reform Act relied heavily on notices. However, the IRS did get in trouble with being able to make those notices stick because they didn't go through the full review process. They probably feel like if they try that now, they could have the same problem. So they want to be a little more careful. Again, so we're going to watch these projects, see how they go. You may want to take a look at that list. If what you're concerned about is on the list, at least you know we should get guidance here somewhere, hopefully before we have to file returns. If what you need to know about is not on the list, your reason for concern got a little bit higher. We have another issue here the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act causes problems with. And that was an issue that actually related to an earlier revenue procedure, 2017-60, that we talked about last year that involved a special rule for pyrrhotite damage that occurred in the northeastern U.S., especially the state of Connecticut. For those who don't remember that position, the problem is there. Concrete foundations of residences are prematurely deteriorating because what turns out is there is this mineral that naturally occurs in the concrete mixes used up there called pyrrhotite that unfortunately interacts with the what's available in the environment up there and causes the concrete to effectively begin to fall apart way prematurely. So that's kind of expensive. As you can guess, that being your foundation, it's kind of expensive to fix. It's not a cheap repair. It's a bit of a pain. So the IRS had provided relief in Notice 20 in Revenue Procedure 2017-60 that allowed individuals who basically had the problem and could get an engineering report stating that their foundation problems related to this, they were able to claim that as a casualty loss. That was great, except it was issued right at the end of November. And virtually to the day a month later, we had signed into law the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. And by the end of December, as you may recall, there was no deduction being allowed for payments made for personal casualty losses, unless it was a federal disaster area. This isn't one. So because of that removal of the deduction, a lot of people were getting upset saying, well, wait, you gave us this wonderful piece of relief, and then it's immediately taken away by the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So what's going to happen here? There's a table of when you paid for the repair, when you get to deduct it. The most interesting part of the table, though, is if you pay for a repair after December 31st, 2017, if you do so before you file your 17 return, you know, either timely or on extension, you just reported on the 17 return. But again, this sort of foundation work is going to be difficult. It's going to take a lot of time to work out. So the IRS said, if you, as long as you pay for that work before the statute runs out on filing a claim for refund for 17, you will be able to deduct that on your 17 return. So effectively, what they're doing is they're working around the problem that you can't claim a casualty loss in 2018 for personal casualty losses unless they're in federal disaster areas by effectively just going to say, we're going to pretend these are all 17 casualties, even though under the original ruling, you had to pay it by the end of 17. Now we're just going to treat anything you pay after 17, as long as the damage was there by the end of 17. Now the damage, I shouldn't say the damage, as long as the pyrotite was there by the end of 17, then you're able to get this relief as long as you pay for such repairs prior to the date that the statute closes on your 17 return. If you have clients affected by this, this is probably good news for them to, you know, to make sure they understand that they got more time than they thought they did. Another Tax Cuts and Jobs Act issue came up. As you may recall, this is news release 2018-19, issued on February the 6th, 2018. As you may recall, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act changed our inflation index to the chain CPI or CCPIU from the old standard CPI for urban consumers, CPIU. And that was effective for tax years beginning after December 31st, 2017. Well, of course, 2018 is such a number, such a year. The problem was the IRS had released numbers computed under the original CPIU index back in October. So the problem becomes, you know, what numbers can we rely upon? Well, the IRS in this news release first tells us that, look, most of the qualified plan numbers, like what you can defer to a 401k, the max funding and that can be the max amount that can go into an account of a defined contribution of a beneficiary, let's say, of a defined contribution plan, those are all set by reference to the Social Security Act. So they weren't impacted by the change in the law. So those numbers, all good, they're not going to change. However, various limits related to IRAs, Roth IRAs, what's a deductible contribution, where how much you can put into, how much you can earn to still make a contribution to a Roth IRA, those are tied to the IRC rate schedule, which would be the change CPI now. But the IRS completed their work on these. They determined that based on the rounding and all the other issues that are involved, they've determined that those numbers will not change. So all of the retirement numbers that were released initially in Notice 2017-64 and News Release IR 2017-177 back in October of last year are still valid. So if you took an update course before just the end of December and they had this nice table of all of the numbers that you could count on for qualified plan funding and for your IRAs for 2018, those are still good. Of course, the other tables they had related to all the other numbers, we still have no clue what those should be. And we have no real announcement yet on when those numbers are coming out. But hey, look, at least we know something. So we'll take what we can get. Let's go away now from the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act and any other acts Congress is passing, and let's talk about a case. Murillo versus Commissioner, and I'm sure I mispronounced that poor person's name. I apologize now. Tax Court Memorandum Decision 2018-16 that was issued on February the 5th of 2018. Now, this taxpayer, he had a lot of real estate projects going, and he had a number of related S corporations, and we were not talking about small funds, small amounts of money. His S corporations would advance funds between each other. And over time, this one particular S corp that we'll talk about had advances come to it basically of over $15 million. And it had net advances of, you know, significant amount of that. It wasn't 15 at the end of this being done, but it was substantial that we had here, multiple million dollars worth of advances that were on the books. Now, we've talked before, and we talked about a case just a few weeks ago, that if you loan money from one S corporation to another, that does not generally give basis to the shareholder. The shareholder can't claim the loss. But in this case, same problem. And we saw it before, to be totally honest, years ago in the Ruckreigel case, which had a similar problem. The CPA, as in Ruckreigel, decided, okay, the client, for whatever reason, didn't do it. In Ruckreigel, we discovered that the client, you know, they tried to get the client to do it right. They did it right once, then never did it right again. So what would happen is at the end of each year, the CPA would record a journal entry and take whatever had been advanced among the companies and would effectively journal it out to fix the problems. And a company ends up owing the others money. That would be journaled in such a way that it would be treated as a distribution from those other corporations to the shareholder, followed by the shareholder loaning the money to the corporation. Now realize, none of that actually happened. We're just journaling it that way. This was a problem because one of the S corporations had gone out and acquired a condominium in a bankruptcy sale. And when the real estate crisis hit, this thing really didn't do well. It had a building repossessed. It picked up a $13 million loss on the tax return. The taxpayer attempted to claim that loss and also claimed an operating loss carryback based on that loss. But the tax court looked at what happened. And the court said, there's no evidence that the corporation itself, the corporations themselves, ever intended a shareholder loan to be what was going on, ever intended to distribute money to the shareholder, have it picked up, transferred over. They found none of that had actually taken place. Rather, it was a transfer between companies. Now, the taxpayer did try to get out by saying, hey, but since Ruckreigel, we've had a change here. In 2014, we changed the rule to go to test for bona fide debt. And so because of that, tax court, you're wrong. You're saying I shouldn't get this because I'm not economically poor. In essence, you know, if $5 million goes from one S corporation I control to another S corporation I control, nothing went out of my account. So I'm not economically poor. The entities may have an issue, but I'm not really economically any worse off currently because I still have all the shares of stock. That's what I own. The tax court said, taxpayer, you're overreading that. Well, it is true. The preamble to the reg says we're getting rid of that economic negative effect test, and we're going to replace it with bona fide debt. The tax court made clear that the historic bona fide debt test, the IRS is going to link us to an S-corp to the 2014 regulations, in which they did link us to, has always taken a look at whether if a debt is truly bona fide and valid, the person lending the money should have some sort of economic detriment to them by making the loan, meaning that if this loan's not paid back, they'll be worse off. They'll be gone from their own assets. Some asset would be gone and missing. The court said, look, that rule is subsumed here. Realistically, this is a broader and a tougher test than you had before. And since there's no evidence that the corporation ever actually intended to do what you claimed it was doing, there's no basis in the debt. This resulted in a disallowance of over $8 million of losses from that repossession on the taxpayer's return. I know as CPAs, we often want to fix things, right? And we get out and we think, well, you know, it's the end of the year. The client didn't understand. Really, economically, he lent this money. And yeah, the client doesn't understand why, and I can't get him to do it, or I just don't want to because it'll be a conversation I won't like, and they won't like it. They'll be mad at me. So why don't I just fix it with a journal entry at year end? Be very, very careful, especially in an S-corp context, fixing things with a journal entry at year end. This sort of fixing, where we treat something as not what the taxpayer recorded as on the books, it tends to come back to bite us. And in this case, it definitely came back to bite the taxpayer because the court said, look, you don't have it there. And what's sad about not having that basis is it's actually fairly trivial for them to have structured this deal in such a way that the taxpayer would have had basis and would have been able to claim the loss. Had the taxpayer just actually been taking distributions from the other S's that had excess cash and then using that pool of cash to advance money to the corporation that needed it on a loan, the taxpayer would have had the full $8 million loss that could be claimed. As it is, the other S corporations have bad debts to the related company. And those bad debts, you know, realistically, if they're not business bad debts, could end up being even capital losses. We're not sure how they're going to unwind this or what they're going to do. But the practical matter is that, yeah, this isn't really a situation you want to be in. Next up, we're going to talk about an engineer. And the question was, could an engineer who's conducting what obviously per the memo was a cost segregation study, can that person be held liable for penalties for essentially assisting someone in understating their tax? This is Chief Counsel Advice 2018-05-001. It was issued on February the 2nd, 2018. In this case, the engineer had advised taxpayers, you know, during a cost segregation study, pretty obviously, of ways that they could take part of what the costs that were in their building right now and treat those as shorter lived. So make them 5 years, 6 years. Those of you remember the Hospital Corporation of America case from years ago, that's a justifiable structure if you actually meet the requirements of HCA. But the IRS found in this case, this is their position. And again, we're not going to say where this is actually the way it's happening, because obviously this is their memo. But this memo doesn't care about this. They're just saying, if this happens, do we have a position to assess penalties? So the agents examining this entity, examining some entities, felt that this engineer had gone way beyond what's allowed, had been abusive. So they've been treating things that were clearly major structural components of the building, not required for some specialized purpose, as if you could take them as five-year property and write them off very quickly. The IRS disallowed that. They forced it. They wanted to go back to 39-year property. And because there was a pretty significant tax benefit that the taxpayers had claimed on this, they wanted to know, could they penalize the engineer? Section 6701 says that if you, you know, if you aid or assist in basically aid or assist in putting together documents that are going to be used essentially to understate the liability of somebody for taxes, and you know or have reason to know they're going to be used that way, then you're potentially liable for a penalty for each of those documents that are submitted that attempt to claim an excess tax deduction. The IRS discovered that, well, you know, this engineer had incorrectly reclassified property in order to accelerate or front load depreciation deductions during the first 5 years the property is placed in service. So he created larger tax breaks for his clients. You know, that, you know, they decided that some of that was excessive. And the question was, could they impose the penalty? The IRS decided they could. It meets all the requirements. He prepared and furnished to each of his clients a detailed TOS-SEG report, right? And he knew those reports were going to be used to set depreciation. He knew using the lower depreciation was the, let's say, the shorter life was going to result in more depreciation, going to result in, assuming that he's going beyond what he should, an understatement of tax. So therefore, he's subject to penalty of, if it's an individual, $1,000 return. If it's a corporation, $10,000 for return. And because he had written this stuff down to 5 years, the, you know, he found that then these become five-year assets, the report found that he had therefore assisted in the understatement of tax for those 5 years. Because he assisted in the understatement of tax for those 5 years, he would be subject to five separate penalties. I guess he was somewhat lucky he hadn't determined it was seven-year assets, because then it'd be seven separate penalties. Again, this is what we talk about for an engineer on cost seg. So what the memo says is, just because you're an engineer and you're not preparing the returns, you're not safe if you have a too aggressive cost segregation study. Well, if you didn't remember, this is the week that has Valentine's Day in it, right? Wednesday, the 14th. Now, if you're listening to this before Wednesday and this is news for you, you might want to go solve that problem here shortly and quickly run off and take care of whatever one needs to take care of. Yeah, the roses are nice. Hey, the puppy could go too. So you get the puppy and roses for Valentine's Day. Maybe all of that will get you out of the doghouse. Otherwise, you won't be spending time with the dog in the doghouse. So, you know, be aware. We want to make sure you enjoy this time of year, as, you know, Valentine's Day is the day before 1099 from Broker's Day on the 15th of February. So last chance to really get out there maybe and have a good time. Go out, enjoy yourself on that day, because there's going to be a lot of problems for the next 2 months after that. Whatever you do, though, make sure you keep in mind your state societies are continuing to work with you. A lot of state legislatures are currently right now working on their tax conformity legislation. That means a lot of the state societies and volunteers with those societies are currently working on trying to make sure the legislatures handle this properly and don't give us something unworkable. Also, remember, once tax season is done, those same state societies will be offering you the live and will be offering you live CPE through those societies. So when all of this calms down, and you know, there's going to be some fun stuff to study after this, like how in the world the qualified business income deduction works, because that's going to be an interesting one. You know, we're going to have coverage, we're going to have courses in that area. Be sure you check that out right after tax season. But otherwise, yeah, please remember, this is the Valentine's Day week. So if it's Wednesday or before and you're listening to this, now's the time to go out and fix that problem. This has been the current federal tax developments for the week of February the 12th, 2018. You can catch your daily updates at currentfederaltaxdevelopments.com. I shouldn't say necessarily daily, but you know, during the week as we discover things that are important, we'll post things up there. You can send questions and comments to me online, edzollers@currentfederaltaxdevelopments.com. That is definitely the best address to use to get things to me, because I know then it comes from continuing education. Otherwise, anything goes to my main firm email address has a knack this time of year, if it's not client related, to somehow get, you know, shuffled off to the side. And it's one of those things you'll get to real soon now, which means sometimes in May. So yeah, we'll follow it there. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Ed Zollers there on Twitter. If you want to follow me there, I post there. Also, I do participate in discussions on the Reddit subreddit Tax Pros. So that you can find at www.reddit.com/r/taxpros. Otherwise, we'll be back here again next week, looking at whatever has happened in the interim, you know, how things go on, any additional guidance we get. Number of IRS and Treasury employees are speaking right now to an ABA tax section convention in San Diego. There may be some interesting information coming from that next week we'll need to follow up on. And all the other stuff the IRS may give us. Hey, they're going to be working next week, at least except for Monday. So there's not a government shutdown. We might actually get some stuff, therefore, to work from. And hopefully, here shortly, we'll begin to get Tax Cuts and Jobs Act information coming out. In any event, see you next week and enjoy your week in taxes until we come back next week.